We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
The New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson.
And Holiday, the dribble penetration. So tough going to the goal.
High up on the rim to rip it down.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to the bonus episode of In the Know. We're trying to deliver some extra episodes here and there this season and as we go forward. So enjoy this one in which we will touch upon everything Zion Williamson and talk about the Pelicans playoff odds. So let's talk about Zion. The Pelicans have released a few reports that they anticipate him being ready soon. They want him to go through a few practices. He went through his first practice this past Thursday with the Pelicans. He's been doing on court work. There was extensive videos of him throwing down dunks in LA at Staples Center before the game. He seems to be moving well. They worked with his kinetic chain to get everything right. And he essentially has to go through three or four practices with the team and then take an assessment, which was a baseline that was determined in the preseason after the Jazz game. So once he meets that baseline, he will be ready to go. We think it's going to be sometime in the middle of January. And so Zion's on his way back. And that raises a lot of questions. Namely, we'll start with this one, Mason. What happens to the starting lineup?
So there's two options here. Well, I guess there's three if you think the Pelicans are going to ease Zion along slowly and not put him in the starting lineup from day one, which is certainly a possibility. I could see them for the first game or two bringing Zion off the bench just to get him acclimated. But I could also see Gentry wanting to try to get some recreate some stability in the rotations and get him where he wants to get him from day one. It really comes down to it's J.J. Redick or Lonzo Ball, right? I mean, one of those two guys is coming out because it's not going to be Favors. It's not going to be Brandon Ingram. It's not going to be Drew.
So, you sure it's not going to be Brandon Ingram? So that's a throwback to the beginning of the season, if you guys are listening.
Yeah. Well, I'll take the L on that one in perpetuity. I've been taking the L on that all season, and so that's fine. But I think to me, it's Lonzo. You take him out of the starting lineup. And this doesn't mean – I'm not trying to cut Lonzo's minutes in half by any stretch, but I just think that you need, especially when you're adding in another non-shooter, which Zion is at this point, into the lineup, you've got to have a guy like JJ spacing the floor, a guy who moves the way JJ does off the ball, and is a guy that defenses always have to know where he is because he can knock down a shot from anywhere. I think that's so critical when you have a team of really, I mean, Ingram's done a lot better from 3-point range, obviously. So you have a little bit more shooting than maybe you thought you had going into the season. But I still think that JJ is critical to keeping the offense, afloat, especially, as we talked about in our last podcast, how bad this team has been in the half court. I mean, to me, it's you move Lonzo to the bench. You obviously still try to give him minutes with the starters, but I like the idea of making him your sixth man, and so giving him a good chunk of minutes. But just maybe he's not a starter anymore. So that feels like the move I would make, and I think that's what Gentry will do. But I'm not positive. I mean, it depends on where they what the end goal is, and is Lonzo a piece moving forward? Is he the guy they're trying to build up trade value for because they're not sure if he's going to be a long-term fit with the rest of this team? And if that's the case, do you try to give him a role in the starting lineup? I don't know. But I would say, long-winded answer, but I would say it's Lonzo who comes out of the starting lineup.
Yeah, and I think I would agree for the most part. I would say Lonzo would be the first person in. Honestly, I would sub Drew out first, put Lonzo in there, and I'd sub Favors out, maybe put Jackson in there to create a Lonzo favorable lineup that is very athletic and can run and kind of allows him to do Lonzo things. And so, you essentially have Zion and Jax manning the front court. You have a shooter in JJ, and you can sub him out for Moore or Hart or whatever. And then Ingram and Lonzo who have chemistry already. So that would be the stagger structure I'd be looking for until, Zion's able to take a sub, which I'm sure he'll only play 5 minute stretches at a time, be like capped at 20 minutes. When he gets back, but we're talking when he's more ready for starter type minutes. So that's the way I would look at it. Now, Zion coming in, I guess I just kind of touched upon it. Do you anticipate him having restrictions, and do you think he's going to last for the duration of the season?
I think back to backs will. I would expect him to eventually get up to playing normal minutes, and that doesn't mean he's going to play 35 to 40 a night. I think the Pelicans, if you look back to the AD era, I think the rookie year for AD, I don't think he was playing that many minutes, but I could be wrong on that, but that's what I remember. And so I think if he can get up to around 30 minutes a night, low 30s, I think that's a good spot. But yeah, I would think they'll keep him out of back-to-backs just for an abundance of caution. Any disagreements there?
I think the minute restrictions might last for the duration of the season, but I think they'll be up to like 30 or like 33 or something. We'll see.
Fair enough. Yeah.
What
about the back end? First the starting lineup, but next, how does the end of the rotation change? Who falls out?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think I would eliminate Jazz minutes entirely. I mean, I would have done that now. But I would eliminate Jazz minutes entirely. I think he's gone. I think Kendrick's minutes die a little bit. But he's been not receiving that many minutes right now anyway. So it's weird for me because, okay, let's assume starters, Drew, JJ, Ingram, Zion, Favors. That's five players.
Yep.
Your first off the bench, Lonzo. Second off the bench, Etuan?
Are you going number of minutes? Or are you going order of people coming off the bench?
Let's go minutes.
Okay. Seventh. It's. Yeah, I mean, that's where I start to not really know the answer. I think it's Etuan, but there's. I mean, you have Etuan, you have Hart, you have Kemrich. I mean, like, what's the?
So that's your next four, right? So that's nine players. So you're four off the bench: Lonzo, Etuan, Hart, Kenrich. That's your one through four.
And Jax is the five, right? So we got 10 to talk about. I think those are the 10 that we have to figure out where the minutes come out of. And I know you mentioned Ja, and it seems like he's mostly out of the rotation now, apart from the occasions where Gentry doesn't want Jax banging with dudes way bigger than him. But yeah, so from there, it's who gets cut? Because you can't. I guess you could. Gentry could roll out a 10-man rotation on a nightly basis because he wants his team to run so much, and you're not going to throw a ton of minutes at Zion from day one. But it's a tricky question.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jax's minutes gets cut a little bit because there will be lineups with Zion at the center.
Yep.
And well, here's the question: is does Melly get reinserted with the lineup with Zion in there? You run a 4-5 with Zion and Melly. It's only Zion specific lineups though.
Yeah. I hope not. And I get it. Like that looked really good in preseason, but at the same time, I don't know. I mean, to bring a dude like that cold off the bench for like 5 minutes or 6 minutes a night in specific lineups, it's just, I'm not in favor of it. I'd rather get other guys' minutes, but I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. So I guess the second part of Zion coming back is, you know, the Pelicans are not too far out from a standing standpoint to make a run for the playoffs. The schedule does get easier with 14 of the last 15 games the Pelicans are going to play being against teams that are under 500. Let's talk playoffs. We talked playoffs a few months back where we both came to the conclusion like, okay, it's possible they make a run. Since then, they've gone on a 13-game losing streak and been a total disaster, say, for this last bit. Do you still feel they can make a run? Where are you at in that?
Yeah, I mean, they can make a run. I it's still not likely. I mean, I think we may overstate. You look at the standings and you see, oh, four games back or whatever it is. And that sounds great when you have, like, 45 to 50 games to play. Like, yeah, we can make that up. Schedule that's easier. We're getting Zion back. Like, that makes sense. What tends to get glossed over is the fact that there's also six other teams between the Spurs and the Pelicans, or five other teams, excuse me. You've got Portland, you've got Phoenix, you've got Minnesota, Sacramento, and Memphis. And so those teams are all thinking the same thing. I mean, there are some draft pick implications there, and teams may kind of start to punt as the season goes longer. And I haven't looked at what all the other strength of schedules are for those other teams, but they got to jump a lot of teams. And so that a lot of things have to break right for them to make it. They can, I would not rule that out yet, but it's going to be challenging.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys haven't read Jason's article on the website, bourbontreechats.com, take a nice read. I mean, if you don't know what site we are at this point, I don't know. I mean, maybe we have some listeners that really aren't site listeners, like site readers and yeah, whatever. If you haven't read Jason's article, take a look. He takes a really good high-level approach. And this is without him, you know, factoring in potential roster moves. Like maybe the Pelicans are going to be buyers. Maybe OKC is going to be a seller, whatever. Because it's impossible to predict what's going to happen there. So he just takes a straight look at what he thinks is the likelihood the Pelicans jump all these teams. And let me tell you, it's not pretty, because anytime, like what you need is the Pelicans to do really well. They need to win at a clip they have not won at. So even if you win at a 600 clip, that's, you need help from other teams in terms of them dropping games they shouldn't win. And then they also need the Pelicans to do stuff they never have done this season before. So it's a tough ask. I think the Pelicans are more likely to win at the clip that they need to, just given the strength of schedule and them finding their footing, than there are other teams that are going to play along, because all it takes is one team being decent, like going 500 over a stretch where the Pelicans go 600, and they're able to keep pace. And I think it becomes unlikely. So it's easy to get excited about playoff hopes. I I don't recommend it, but at the same time, I do think the Pelicans are liable to be a lot more successful to close a season than they were to start it.
Yeah, I think a couple interesting things here that may benefit the Pelicans. One is they've got a lot of games left. By virtue of that strength of schedule, they've got a lot of games left against some of these teams that are in front of them. I don't think they played the Spurs yet this year, unless I'm going crazy. Same deal with Memphis. So, right, they've got 8 games total against those teams still?
Yep.
I think that's right. Yeah, and so, and then all the other teams, I mean, so they've beaten Portland a couple of times somehow. And then
they have the tiebreaker against Portland, which is important.
Yep, that is important. They've split against Phoenix. And I don't know if some of these teams outside of their division, and I don't remember who they play 3 versus 4 times, but I mean, point being, there's still a lot of games left they have to play against these teams. So they can do a lot of the work on their own. And so if they don't control their own destiny by any stretch, but well, I guess technically they do. There's enough games left in the season. If they were to win out, they'll make the playoffs. But I mean, a lot of things have to go right, but at the same time, they can do a lot of the work themselves by beating these teams in front of them. So they've got a lot of games left. The second thing, and it ties back to the conversations we had, I can't remember which podcast it was, but talking about how the Pelicans want to approach the trade deadline and the offseason. I mean, you can simultaneously flip, if you're going to flip a contract like Darius Miller for a team that wants to get out of some money, that maybe you traded a guy like Darius Miller and packed him with someone else for a player who has value on the floor, but his contract may extend an additional year. So you get it. You trade Miller for a contract that maybe you can use the following season as an expiring. And also maybe that player can help you on the floor a little bit. I mean, you're not going to get a game changer by any stretch, but you could take a contract that another team might view as not great and have that player help on the floor. And also, you know, if you just kind of assume that the Pelicans aren't going to have cap space, aren't going to be players in free agency this summer, then use it to your advantage on the floor this year and as a trade chip next year.
Okay, so that brings me to my question. If the Pelicans were to make a trade for a player, one, what type of player should that be? And two, whose spot in that 9 or 10-man rotation that we talked about is that player going to take? Because you're not going to trade for a non-rotation player. And, right. You know, and you likely... And I guess, yeah, who would you move and what? How would you go about that?
Yeah, I think it's got to be a ball handler. It's got to be a point guard if you're trying to find someone in the to really take a spot in the rotation. It's not going to be – I mean, you're not going to have anyone take – just for developmental reasons, I don't think you bring in a 5 because you've got Favors and – Jackson Hayes. And at this point, if you're trying to bring in a guy just to be injury insurance, I don't think that makes a lot of sense. So I wouldn't try to cut Jackson Hayes out of the rotation with the way he played to start the year. So it's not a 5. I don't think it's a 4 because you've got Zion and then you can slide enough guys like BI or even Kenrich down to the 4 and take those minutes. So I think it's a backcourt, it's a ball handler, a guy who can take more pressure off, whether it's the second unit or even off of Drew in some pinches. I think that's the player I'd look for. As for the who that person is, I haven't gotten there yet. What do you think?
I mean, I think I don't agree.
Okay.
I think
good.
Yeah. I think the Pelicans have too many guards, and obviously to move someone, they would have to move their guards. Each one's a prime candidate. Guys like Frank are a prime candidate. But if I'm bringing a ball handler, I mean, I'd rather just give those minutes to Nikhil. I really want the Pelicans to bring in a legitimate 3-4, a player that can play both those positions comfortably. I talked about Michael Kidd Gilchrist, MKG, in our group chat. I think I'm fine decreasing Kenrich's minutes and giving them to someone who might be better. Especially because Zion's going to be in and out of the lineup, going to have some restrictions. And you definitely need some insurance on that forefront because when Zion was out, Kenrich has been our best option there. I mean, you talked about sliding people up or giving people minutes. I think that's less than ideal. I'd rather have a legitimate player that knows what they're doing there and won't compromise the defense from a size perspective. And MKG is someone who I think will help our defense tremendously and is even someone you could close games with when you're playing Zion at the five, so to speak.
Yeah, fair enough. No, I think that makes sense. My thought was also, so MKG is a good name, and I would agree with you that he's an upgrade from Kemrich and could play, could get rotation minutes on this team. I also was trying to think about availability, and I haven't gotten down to the, what players and what teams might be available, but just generally speaking, I feel like there are more rotation lead, like point guard type players than there are those kind of hybrid 3-4s that may be more of a scarcer resource. But again, that's not founded in me looking through each team's rotations and figure out who might be available. That's just a general league.
Let me expand upon that. A 3-4 or a 4-5. That's what I'd be looking for.
Okay.
And I think there are more 4-5s. So you just look at the Knicks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, if you get someone like Taj Gibson, I think he could help. If you get someone like, I wouldn't want any of the Morris twins on my team.
Morris. <That's...
laughs> I wouldn't want them. But, you know, there's someone you can give all of Kendrick's minutes to and you'd be fine. If you get a Tad Young, who, you know, I don't know what the hell the Bulls are doing.
Yeah.
He's someone that can work out there. And I think, you know,
I would love that. Yep.
So it's just someone with the ability, someone that has the size and the ability to play up or down a position at that four spot. And that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. And the trick there with, for a 4 or 5, I just really don't want whoever they bring in to have the potential to take away Jax's minutes. Like if they get down the stretch and really feel like, oh, we can make a push for the playoffs. I just don't want to see Jax spend the last dozen games on the bench. And I feel like if you bring in a guy like Taj, as much as I like him, that might be bound to happen. Tad Young, I think, is a better option as someone who could potentially play a little bit at the three if in a pinch. But yeah, I'm wary of the 4 or 5 guy. That's all. But 3-4, I hear you on that for sure.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I just like, you know, if you have another situation when Derek Favors goes down, then like, what are you left with? You know, sure. You have a situation with Zion out of the lineup, like what are you left with there? So that's what I'm looking at. Is you have a situation if Lonzo gets hurt, then and you still have Drew as a playmaker, you can get Nikhil some minutes and you can make do at the point guard, especially with B.I. being able to handle the ball and Zion coming back. You know, if Drew goes down, it's a little bit harder because you take a huge hit on your perimeter defense. But again, like you can build a team that does the things you needed to do around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't want this to – I feel like it sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth by saying I want Jax to make sure he keeps getting consistent backup minutes, but also looking for a lead guard, which would mean Nikhil's season is effectively over for the Pelicans this year. When it comes down to it, we've seen that Jax can be a serviceable NBA player even though he's only 19 years old. We just haven't seen that yet from Nikhil, apart from preseason and summer league. I just don't have that level of confidence yet. So I'm okay with him getting minutes if he proves that he can be that guy. But he just and I think he can be. I just don't know if it's this season.
Yeah, I agree. I think my motivations have come from watching that last Lakers game and then just kind of looking ahead. It's like, who do the Pelicans have that are going to tangle with some of those guys? And if you just get one solid player that can tangle with one of those guys, and I think that makes a world of difference.
Yeah, and I looking at some of the teams between – or the teams that play a bunch of games against, I don't know. I just – maybe it's – you're not going to have the – obviously, I know you know this, but you're not going to have the AD-LeBron matchup every night. I mean, you're going to have – I think a lot of these teams don't have a ton of size to be too worried about in the sense that the Pelicans don't have enough to handle it. But, again, you're right that they're one injury away from that not being the case.
Right. Anywho, I think that was a good look at going forward and if we should expect the Pelicans to make the playoffs or not. I think you and I are clearly both rooting for it to happen. I don't think we're going to be in a situation where we're rooting for losses.
Nope. Especially not with this draft class.
No, not with this draft class. But go Anthony Edwards and go Killian Hayes. Those are two guys that I wouldn't mind having on this Pelicans team going forward. But no, I think the Pelicans are in a good situation to make this season successful even if they don't make the playoffs. And I think that's meaningful going into next season. And I think it's meaningful going into free agency, and it's meaningful in terms of selling yourself on the belief, because you can easily tell yourself, okay, well, the first half of the year was derailed by injuries. This is what we really are.
Is there any guy that you think that you would target? Let's assume that it's not Didi and it's not your great idea from a few weeks back with Joakim Noah. Is there a guy you look at and say, all right, I want to use the disabled player exception we got from Darius Miller to bring in somebody who you think fills the role you were just talking about, who's not on the team right now? Or is that, you know,
Jeff Green?
That's right. He hasn't signed with anyone, has he?
Jeff Green, he's going to turn the ship around.
Darren Collison. I guess he's not interested in coming to New Orleans, but he's coming back
like,
to New Orleans.
I want to go to L.A. or I want to go to L.A.? That's what Darren Collison said. He's like, I gave up $10 million a year and I retired. And then I decided, actually, I want to be back in the NBA, so I want to go to L.A. or L.A.
Yeah. No, so Jeff Green, which I totally did not remember that he did not sign with a new team yet. Yeah, I mean, he fits exactly the guy you're talking about. Anyone else? I can't think of anyone, but.
I mean, people that are like readily available, nah, I know no one else.
Yeah.
No one else. I can't. I mean, yeah, no. Nah. Jeff Green, though. Uncles on the team. We would have Uncle Jeff Green and then Uncle E. This is what the team needs from a locker room standpoint. I'm telling you. Griff knows this. He's just waiting.
What about not a Shump fan?
No. I don't see what Shump gives you over, like, Josh Hart.
Yeah.
Or Etwan. I don't want a 2-3 type player. I really don't. Another 6'5", 6'6 player. You can't play power forward even for a little bit, then I don't want you.
How about what about Ryan Anderson?
Gross. Gross.
So he's not a 3-4. Is that what you're saying?
He's whatever he wants to be. But he's not on the Pelicans roster, and he shouldn't be that.
I just pulled up a list on Forbes, an updated list of the best 15 best NBA free agents. Dante Cunningham is on that list.
There we go. That's the guy I'm talking about.
There you go.
That's what we've needed.
Fareed's also on there, and Luol Deng.
Fareed's an interesting one. I would not have picked him up. Deng, I would have liked for locker room purposes. I just don't know what he's got left in the tank.
Jonathan
think
Simmons, that's a 3-4.
Nah, he's more of a 2-3. I still think it's MKG. Just I want a guy that is he's honestly a tremendous defender. And if he was ever on teams that were like legitimately good, he would get all defense awards. He would. And he's also fantastic in transition, and he's been stuck on slow Charlotte teams. I would like to see him on this team.
I'd sign me up for that. There's also a guy in Memphis who's getting decent minutes and making all of his threes. His name is Solomon Hill. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I would take Solo back. I don't want to. Solo's my friend. I will have
Solo's
another buddy to talk to.
Solo is not Graham's friend, but he's everyone else's friend.
I forgot about that. Oh my goodness. Yeah, no, I will take Solo back. You remember, it's apparently Gentry's fault that Solo is making all his threes in Memphis.
Yeah, of course it is. Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah. Solo would be great for this locker. He actually talks. He would hold people accountable.
Yeah.
That's why we're losing this year. We don't have Solomon Hill.
That makes sense.
Yep. Okay, well, I think that's a good place to end the podcast, because if we've talked about Solomon Hill, we've gone too far. So I hope you guys enjoyed this bonus episode here. Thanks for listening.